Welcome to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. Hope everyone is doing fantastic out there for the Americans. Hope you had a great Memorial Day holiday weekend. For everyone else, hope you enjoyed a weekend that was very low-key when it came to the mixed martial arts world. All the big players kind of taking this one off. We were supposed to have the inaugural GFL shows on this weekend. Of course, we know that did not materialize at all, but gave, I think, a lot of people around the industry a chance to kind of chill and reset. Don't get many more off weeks coming up over the next like 4 or 5 months or so. So take advantage while you can. I tried to keep busy last week, had a great show with Michael Bisping for my birthday. If you did not get the chance to watch that one yet, absolutely go back and do so. Touched on a lot of stuff that is still absolutely relevant to this day. But how do we one up the show? Bisping was one of my favorite guests yet. In order to try to do that, we are bringing on the one, the only, the bad guy, the coach of The Ultimate Fighter Season 33, which debuts this week on ESPN, Mr. Chael Sonnen. Surprised it took me this long to get Chael on the show, 33 episodes in. We tried to make it work a few times in the past. Timing didn't line up, all that stuff. But what better time to have him on than now? His name very much in the headlines recently. And of course, the big show, Tough 33, debuts Tuesday. He will coach opposite Daniel Cormier. So we will get into all of that. I will hit him with a few storylines that are top of mind and as we go into a very significant June for the UFC. And then you know Chael, there's going to be a lot of crazy, wild, wacky turns. Hope you guys enjoy it all. Sit back, relax, make sure to throw the show a like, a comment, a subscription, whatever you can do to offer some support on audio or video platforms. Means the world to us as we continue to grow this thing, trying to make you all proud out there that are showing your support. All the comments really do mean a lot to the bottom of my heart. So please keep them coming and let's make this thing big. We'll do so by trying to have a great show here with Chael Sonnen. I'm going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with the bad guy. We are back here on the Bonfire with the one, the only, the great Chael Sonnen on the debut week of The Ultimate Fighter 33. Chael, you're back in Las Vegas. What are we doing this week after we've already filmed the show?
Buddy, I am back. Sorry, I'm trying to get to a good view here. I am back at the Red Rock. Have you spent any time out here?
I haven't spent the night, but I've been in there. They did an open workout, I think, for Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz before their second fight.
This is one of the most beautiful properties. I got invited to go to Mar-a-Lago, and I know I'm bragging, but I got invited to go to Mar-a-Lago earlier this year, just before the election, so that must have been October. And there was a requirement by the Secret Service, and I couldn't specifically tell you why, but you had to stay a night in this other hotel. And this other, there was a checks process, and there was a scan. They checked for whether, there was a whole thing. But then when the bus came to take you to Mar-a-Lago, you had to go from there, and you couldn't do that unless you had stayed the night at this other property. So when I stepped foot in that property, I told my wife, my hot-ass wife, I said, this is the nicest property I've ever stepped foot in. And she's like, yes, me too, until the next day when the bus took us to Mar-a-Lago. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, hey, this is the nicest property I've ever stepped foot in. But this Red Rock is a direct competitor, bro. This is a special, this place is nice. Yeah. I just got here, and I can just tell you this place is nice.
Yeah, and it's I think the only negative to it is it's just a little far away from the Strip and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, and for anyone who's not a fan of that, it's excellent.
Well, and if we're talking trash, what's up with all of these casinos? None of them buffets. They don't have buffets. Everyone knows with Vegas, you have gambling and you have buffets. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that. I mean, they're all closing. The Bellagio itself, they got a buffet, but it closes at 8 o'clock. Aria did away with its buffet. I believe Mandalay Bay, you could check that one. That was never all that great of a buffet in the first place. Every place is supposed to have a buffet in Vegas. It's just part of Vegas. If you lose money, you lose money. It's like steak and eggs for $3.99. You have to have it.
Yeah.
And it's not like that with buffets, man. It's hard to find a buffet now.
It is. I can't remember. I don't think I've seen one since COVID. So
and buffet used Vegas to be where, yeah, and like anybody could go. Like that's where a poor guy would go for like his birthday. His family would take him to work, and then they sit there for like an extra hour. It's not like that. You got to get reservations. It's competitive. You got to dress up. There's lines you got to wait in. Like a buffet in Vegas is a thing. And I do wish, if I'm being fair with you, that the Red Rock had a buffet. There, I've said it. So what? So what? We can all still be friends.
Yeah, call up the Fertittas. Hopefully they still have some influence. Tell them to
bring
it back.
That's what I'm saying. No, I think Lorenzo's office right downstairs. I think old Chael's going to have to go knock on the door and make a suggestion. It's just a suggestion.
Are we there for business, or do you just bring the family out, or what do they have you in
I
Vegas?
Oh, I thought you knew. Oh, I thought this is what you were calling me for. No, I'm doing, so I'm on a media tour, as a matter of fact. In fact, I really did. I thought that's what you contacted me. We're here for the Red Rock because tomorrow is the premiere of The Ultimate Fighter, 30-year anniversary, which I think means 20-year anniversary now that I've done the math. But the bottom line is they're going to show it here, and I don't have a lot of details. I'm here. Daniel's here. They didn't bring the teams in. They just brought the coaches, and then I guess we go into a theater and we watch the movie together, or the TV show. I think it's something along those lines.
Okay, that makes sense. What,
I just obviously hope it does well. I got to tell you, I hope it does well. The worst thing in the world that you can do is to beg the audience. Like if you beg the audience, you will lose the audience. But I am willing to resort to begging your audience. Like my ego is so directly related to how many people watch The Ultimate Fighter, particularly the premiere. I will either be happy and feel good about myself, or I will be down in the dumps. So I could really use it if people watch the premiere. Even if you want to complain about it. If you could just turn it on, that would help old Chael a lot.
Yeah, everyone out there watching Chael, I know you said you're on the media tour. I took it upon myself to try to help you get some promotion going for this. So, you know, that was my thinking. What would you say out of the three times with Wanderlei Silva, with John Jones, now with Daniel Cormier, what's the pecking order of the experiences? Was this your favorite, your middle, or your least?
Oh, boy. The experiences as a whole are all awesome. Like, you know, I was close with my high school class of 95. In fact, we got our 30-year reunion coming up, and everybody will show up. You know, you end up in these things in life that you form these bonds. I had the same thing in college, or maybe even Team Quest before they broke up, where you really had this strong bond. I don't know if I have anything that's quite as strong, though, as The Ultimate Fighter. It is something that will bring guys together very, very quickly. And what you see on TV is largely the celebration. You know, it's a tournament, and you kind of follow the journey of one guy that rises up to the top of the tournament. But one guy rises, and all the other got their heart broken. And it's a tough time, man. I mean, when you're hurt physically, let alone emotionally, and you can't call home, it's a hard time. And so, at any rate, we see this, and we're there for each other. And it's one guy's day today, but it could be his buddy's day tomorrow. And so my point is, it's a very vulnerable spot, and because of that, we bond very, very quickly and very strong.
That's great to hear. Would you say, like, you know, don't want to spoil too much, but the talent on there, do you feel like this is going to produce someone that is going to have a viable and flourishing UFC career?
Yes, I do. So if I could name drop for you the seasons that I did, but the first one was season 17, and it was Kelvin Gastelum who came out of that. Now, of course, Uriah Hall also went on and had a very long career, but Kelvin is still in the UFC. He went all the way to a world title fight with Adesanya. He had a world title fight scheduled against Whitaker. They ended up fighting. The belt wasn't there. The Adesanya fight was not only fight of the night. It ended up being nominated and won fight of the year. I mean, Kelvin Gastelum has
had goes in the Hall of Fame this summer, too.
Yeah. Now, just one amazing career. Yep. So I didn't know that. Gastelum, Adesanya is going into the Hall of Fame. I did not know that.
Yeah, that's the fight that goes in this year.
That is super cool. I was not aware of that. Okay, thank you for telling me. And I saw something on that, but I didn't piece that together. Okay. And then, you know, in the Brazil season, we still have Paulo Costa. Paulo Costa is still going strong. He was Vanderlei's side, but, you know, he's still going strong. He was part of that process. We had a guy come through that never really got his credit. In fact, he won it. His name was Warley Alves.
Yes.
Warley Alves.
First person to beat Colby Covington in MMA.
And pretty handily. He choked him out. I remember being worried for that fight. I knew, you know, I remember thinking, hey, this is a harder fight than people are aware. And, you know, Colby was able to rebound. I think that fight actually really motivated and drove Colby. I think Colby, if he was to tie his career back to the things that he needed, Colby needed to not be a national champion. The fact that he was an All-American is what led him to the UFC. And I believe the fact that he lost to Warley is what drove Colby to go on to be the interim champion. I think it ended up being one of those helpful losses. But yeah, man, we had some massive talent. And this season, by the way, if you're just asking me just purely skill for skill, move for move, the quality of understanding of our sport is stronger in this season than it was in the previous two that I coached.
Okay, that's very solid. I'm really looking forward to whatever the coach's challenge ends up being, because there's so much between you and Daniel. I'm very curious to see what they did for you guys, but I know you can't speak too much on it. But
Well, can you imagine how unfair that would be? I mean, but could you really imagine? Like, when you take a look at me, you see former athlete, but you see somebody that looks like they're carved out of stone. You think Greek god. You probably think Chael even means like some kind of mythical figure. But just to take a look at me. When you look at Daniel, you see a stack of mashed potatoes. And you just think to yourself, like, how did that guy ever do anything? Then they're going to put us in something. It doesn't really matter what they had us do. Whatever they have us do, how could you imagine that it would be a level playing field? You know what I mean? And it's one of these things. As I went through this process, I was talking trash about Daniel. That was like as a character. But as I got to know Daniel, he was just such a nice guy. I've been trying to talk less trash about him. But it's still one of these spots where, you know, I got to carry a show.
Yeah. Well, you did that a lot with him, right? You got the podcast. I saw you guys were in New York for a media tour. They're putting you everywhere together. And you feel you're carrying it all.
We had a great time in New York.
Yeah.
We stayed right in Times Square. Ooh. My son has been able to come to this journey. He was on the set of The Ultimate Fighter every day, but he went on to New York on the media tour. Now he's here. He's here with me now. He's trying to get his grandpa to take him to the swimming pool. But had a great time. We had a very good time together. It's been a good experience.
New York.
What are you doing? How are you? What's new with you? You got some new show or something? I see. Yeah. You haven't splurged any on your set. It looks like you're in your bedroom.
I'm actually at my mom's place in Vancouver visiting. Usually I have the nicer background, but we don't take off weeks here, Chael. So we got to keep going. And yeah, we're on episode 33 here. Just wanted to do something kind of on my own outside of MMA Junkie. Yep. You know, like, you know how this media world is evolving. It's always good to have something of your own existing as well.
And good for you. There's a lot of competition right now, so the numbers are changing. But I will tell you, I got involved at a very good time, largely because we got to live through COVID. Nothing was better for business than COVID. It turned out when people stayed home, they needed something to do. And I just love what you're saying, because consistency is important. If you tell the audience you're coming at them X times a week or X times a year, you have a job to do at this point. Yeah. So good for you. If you're on vacation or not, it's got nothing to do with them. You need to make sure the show is there. So good job, buddy.
Exactly. Thank you. And one of the things I like to do, Chael, is, you know, when I have the guests on, I like to go back, you know, through my camera roll and see if I can find the first photo I have with said guests. And I did discover that. And it is the aforementioned New York ahead of your fight with the aforementioned Wanderlei Silva when you came into the Rolling Stone offices and you had arm wrestling that.
Let's play a game before you show. You put the picture up, but then I'll tell you in honesty what performance enhancers I was on. All right, go ahead.
All right, here it is. You see it? Is it up for you?
So this was before Wanderlei Silva. That's in New York. You're looking at a little touch of EPO. You're looking at something called HCG and a little growth.
Okay. And that's, you clearly displayed it, because you destroyed me in that arm wrestling match. I didn't have a chance.
Good, that arm. Oh, my God. Oh, I was telling my wife, or I was looking in the mirror. I said, where did all my muscles go?
And then another one in New York, Chael, I can pull up, and we're nearing the 6-year anniversary of this photo. I don't know if you remember this night. The little guy who's running around your hotel room right now is in your arms.
Oh my God.
That was after your final MMA fight almost 6 years ago now.
Lyoto Machida, we got a little HCG going there. The problem was getting a hold of EPO was difficult. That was a battle we were up against. But still, all the same, still looking good, still looking jacked, right? I can't appreciate a guy that doesn't respect his career and himself enough to stick a needle in his ass every now and then, if you know what I'm saying.
Fair. And I mean, I usually don't want to take photos with the fighters and stuff like that. You know, you try to keep the line of professionalism. But I remember that night you were gracious enough to say, hey, let's take a photo. This is the last one. And here we are. You haven't come back to MMA at least since. Does it feel like it's been almost 6 years since your last fight?
Yes, it was 6 years. And I went and did a boxing match with Anderson, and I was so offended because you called it an exhibition. And I've just never done an exhibition boxing match. I never have. I mean, I had the paperwork, and I had my WBC, might have been WBA. I still got it in my – where I was licensed. I was having to take the drug test, which I was completely nervous about because I knew that could go either way. I trained so hard for that match, and that was a small deal in America. But in Brazil, man, we were on the sides of buses. We were on billboards. They brought us out on Globo TV, which I'm told is their version of NBC. It's their biggest channel, I'm told. Yeah. And they had us walk at 12:31 a.m. But that was important. That was actually a marketing tool. There was something to the history of the UFC, and there was something to 12:30 in the morning. So we walked at 12:31. But it was an incredible event, and I finally got a draw. I mean, this guy that's been keeping me up and ruining my life, I finally got a draw where I can live with it. I come home, and my own friend called it an exhibition, and I felt so insulted. Truly, truly, it hurt my feelings.
Yeah, I didn't know it was, you know, be that personal. I just went off what Tapology had the fight listed as, because kind of take them as the, yeah.
Exhibition's a very derogatory term, and I don't totally know why. It happened, and I think that maybe Floyd.
What's the better way to call it? Like, what would make more sense if it's not a professional contest?
It was professional. We were paid. Yep. We followed boxing rules. I had to go all the. I was licensed by, and then it's in my pocket. Oh, my pocket's right here. I was actually licensed. This was sanctioned by, and it was either the WBO or the WBA, one of the very respected bodies. I had to do all this. I got pulled aside for a drug test at the weigh-ins, and I even had to get my manager and go, no, wait a minute. They said there wasn't going to be a drug test. It was this whole thing. And it was hard, and the fight was effing hard. I mean, that guy was touching me up, and then somebody said, like, oh, Anderson, you know, he wasn't throwing full punches. And I went back and watched it, and that does actually look – it does actually look like – but that's not because there was some kind of an agreement. Like, I thought it was just because he was getting fatigued. Like, sure. If you get fatigued, you know, you get a little bit tired. We're a little bit older. You're kind of moving around a little bit. And I was doing the same thing to him. I was moving around. Then every now and then, boom, boom, boom. You know, I'm trying to score. I never boxed. So yeah. I didn't know, you know, can you hurt the guy? Do you not? Or do you just try? So I was thinking, I'm just going to try to touch him. I'm going to try to win this. I'm going to try to outscore him. Touch him more times than he touches me. So power was the last thing, man. I was just trying to touch him. It was a strategy, so that when you watch and go, I don't even think they were trying. It's like, well, believe it or not, we were trying. What kind of an insult? I don't have. I can't prove it. It must be.
It's okay. I believe you. And you know, Anderson Silva hasn't competed in anything since then. Did you retire him on that night?
Oh, well, I'm sorry. That was an accident. Oh, I'm sorry. Like, oh, yes, my credit card is made out of
titanium. We don't want to see that, chill.
My credit card is made out of titanium, and there are only 9 in the world that were issued by the Sultan. Just forget it. Just treat me like a regular guy. I'm sorry. Oh, sorry about that, the titanium card.
Well, I hopefully no one pauses that and looks too closely at it, chill. We'll have to blur that out for the sake of your future bank account.
You know what? Let it go. Let's take the risk. Now you got me curious. If okay. somebody is that good of a crook, I mean, I do think at some point it's fair play, right?
You respect them.
Yes, at some point it's got to be honor amongst thieves.
That's funny. I asked. Anderson Silva hasn't had any combat sports since then. Is he done? Did you retire him in that boxing match?
No. So, well, it was funny. Is I thought that he was retiring. I mean, I thought that that was even part of the buildup, but there's such a misunderstanding between us at times. If he chooses to speak Portuguese, then who I get my interpretation from. But he actually made it very clear. He said, I'm not retiring. And he wanted to go to Japan. He said, I'm retiring. And it wasn't even from boxing, because it was definitely a retirement fight. But he told the audience, and here's what he said. It was either that I'm retiring from boxing, or, and this is what I think it was, I am never fighting in Brazil again.
I think that's what it was.
And then said, take me to Japan and sign me up, and then... You know, he had some contacts with Ryzen and whatnot. That our numbers, by the way, that thing was a crazy success. Crazy success. We got thanked so many times. Two girls, they were 26 years old, two girls teamed up and somehow pitched this idea to one of the major distribution, like drinking. I want to say they oversee Dr. Pepper. It's something like that. Okay. Like one of the major world's distributions. They were specifically doing a beer at that time. But the people that wrote the check was like the parent company to Anheuser-Busch. So at any rate, they had the money. But these two girls had to go into an office and pitch a guy. I mean, they probably spent, I would get all in. It could be, they might have, $12 million would be a very good guess. Wow. That's a very, very good guess. All in, $12 million. Yes. they paid. It was incredible. But then just the way they did it, the way that they built it, and these two girls, they knew they would be fired. They knew they would be done in this business if this idea didn't work out. But they also knew that the company would really respect. And they thanked us so many times. They said that it was, you know, much bigger. We did an event, Anderson and I, and it was outdoor on a Wednesday. So it's like 11 p.m. on a Wednesday, but that day was Brazil's version of Valentine's Day.
Okay.
So at 11 p.m. on a Wednesday on, I know that's not a holiday, but it's something, 6,000 people came to an outdoor event to watch Anderson and I face off on a stage. Mm-hmm. It was never supposed to be anything. It was supposed to be real quick, get the photo, go. 6,000 people came. Where I'm up on the stage, you can't even see. It just disappears into the dark of night because they didn't have cameras and they didn't have bleachers because they didn't think people were going to come. This thing got so out of control that I thought they might do it again. Like my big hope, and then I think they're thinking about doing it again, just not with us. I think right. Connor and I think they contacted Connor and Jose Aller. They're looking for like different rivalries, but I of course was hoping Anderson and I'll do it again.
Yeah.
And we probably would have if you didn't say it was fake, you little prick.
I'm sorry, Joe. Hopefully they'll forgive and forget and, you know, bring you back again in the future.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There you
have
go.
Have you ever seen one of these? It's made out of I'm sorry. It's just pretend right. It's like anything else.
Chill. Let's get into some. Not, of...
Except there's only 15 of them granted by the Sultan himself. But go ahead.
Maybe one day I'll reach that level of success in life. We'll see.
Are you aware that I could probably make a dent in the purchase of the Red Rock with that very card? Are you aware of that?
No,
I just want to buy a building with that. There's 15 issued in the world. If anyone is going to slow this down and steal a number, I really encourage them. This would be a good one to get.
Okay, let's see what happens with that, if there's any detectives out there. But Chael,
let's go. Fair game.
Talk about some storylines that are going on right now. We're about to enter the big summer month of June, International Fight Week, two pay-per-views for the UFC. But all anyone can seemingly talk about is the heavyweight division and the absolute mess that's going on. I'm almost tired of it. What? There's not much more that needs to be said. There's a petition out there with 75,000 plus people asking for Jon Jones to be stripped. Tom Aspinall's teasing some sort of announcement for Wednesday, but says it's not going to be a fight, and then made a joke that they're giving him an interim BMF title fight in the heavyweight division. Like, he's clearly just joking around, but I don't know. This is exhausting. Are you tired of this? Are you exhausted of this as well?
I am not. We saw Jon Jones sit on his ass for 3 years where he could have come out and fought. And there were 3 years when, you know, he's taking creatine and doing pull-ups and trying to gain some weight. But the rest of us that had fought him and even observed, just said, hey, Jon, you don't need to gain weight. You can go right now. I think he weighed like 228 when this experiment started. And he got all the way to 236, but he burned 3 years. 3 years at three fights a year, which is the average. I mean, we got robbed of 9 or 10 Jon Jones fights, which even if realistically was 5 or 6, five or six more experiences with the greatest mixed martial artist ever do. Like, we're going to really want that someday. We're going to want those tapes. We're going to want those matches and wish that he had them. So I only tell you no. In that regard, I'm not annoyed. I'm very used to it. I am annoyed and maybe even to the point of a little disappointed. One thing about this sport, as you well know, we fiercely adhere to the rules that we make up as we go. However, there is something known as precedence. When it was never explained to us what an interim championship was, we all did at least see, by the way they were treated, at a minimum, an interim championship makes you the number one contender. The interim champion will not fight in the presence of the undisputed champion. If the undisputed champion is back, by laws of the dictionary, You cannot have an interim champion in the existence of an undisputed champion. You may not have an undisputed champion in the existence and presence of the interim champion. It is literally what creates and crosses out the other word. And I am a little disappointed that they just went with it. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that Colby won that belt, never lost it, woke up one day and was no longer the champion.
Yep.
You know, I'm old enough to remember when Colby beat the BMF champion fair and square at championship weight for 5 rounds and didn't become the BMF champion. I mean, we have done some very bizarre things in this sport. But now, not only are we doing this, one of them just won an award 2 weeks ago. I think it was Tom for the longest reigning interim champion ever, but I could be wrong, and it was John for the longest reigning. champion ever. And you know, whoever created that award, of course, never took into consideration that they just don't fight, that they just sit out and they don't be involved. And it's like, well, that is a real award, and longest standing is a real thing. And whoever came up with that term and that terminology, fighting and being active is not a criteria for it. So I guess it's fair game. And that part of it, though, Mike, that part of it does annoy me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just it's.
And you gotta understand from my perspective. Yeah. I don't expect everybody to understand because they're not like me. They're not the greatest. They're not undefeated. When you're undefeated, like I was, and I'm not trying to rewrite or to be silly. I'm talking about by any reasonable standard of any reasonable set of rules. I've never been defeated. I am the linear champion. If you want to know why John Jones isn't fighting Tom Aspinall, it's because of his training. His training is thrown off because I ripped his toe off. I ripped off John Jones' toe and I threw it into the second row of the audience. He is still hurt from that. So you've got an interim champion, which means whatever we say. You've got an undisputed champion, which means whatever we say. I am the linear champion. And you must understand, I don't get asked all these questions. I get left out of this at times. So imagine how you would feel if that happened.
Yes, and it's immensely frustrating.
How do you explain that?
You don't. Look at the past 10 years of the heavyweight division. We've had 14 title fights, undisputed title fights, and like six interim champions. It's just, it's like the part of the division, you know, we had that era where it was just Kane and Bigfoot and JDS fighting each other over and over and over, but now we're not even getting the fights, and we have a guy who could be the most talented heavyweight ever there sitting in Tom Aspinall. Just don't know what he's doing. Unless we're all being played for fools and they're going to announce something soon.
And don't forget the and a linear champion in me. Yes. That's what the division has. We have an undisputed champion, we have an interim champion, and we have a linear champion in me. Please don't leave that part of the story. You know, Ray Longo was making an argument. Coach was making an argument somewhere, and it was so many years ago. I can't remember what it was. But when he gets to the end of his argument, and his argument wasn't that strong, but it was passionate. Like, he really believed, whatever it was he was, he really believed it. And it wasn't that strong. And then he finishes up, and at the very end he goes, so how do you explain that? And I just remember learning that, going, that's gold. That is gold right there. And I've taken it with me. When I find myself in an argument such as being the linear champion, which is a little bit tough to keep, you got to remind people, you ripped his toe off. It's this whole thing. At the end of it, you just simply, so how do you explain that?
Exactly. How
I got that from Coach Longo. I must credit him. That's fun.
We love Longo. He's the man.
He's the best.
Is this, let's say, be positive here and assume this fight gets done. Maybe it's November in MSG. Is this whole saga going to hurt like the interest and the promotability of the fight? I've heard they want to do like...
Will it hurt my linear championship? Probably not. I think under the rules, I'll still be the linear champion. Let's try to keep it on these guys, though, if you don't mind. Let's try to keep it on these guys. So here's the deal. Mike, and I've never seen this before, and I love to study pieces of the sport. I love the business side of the sport. I'm just fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. I have never personally witnessed, I've had big fights that we've wanted and that were resisted, that we had to wait for, that get negotiated or renegotiated. But 100% of them, we did want those fights more. Like that actually did serve, whether it drove us crazy or not, it did serve as a promotion. And it's just not the case. I can't even make money with these guys. On my YouTube channel, I'm not only audited, I am publicly audited. You can go and see what the people are. I am bombing. If I put John Jones and Tom Aspinall in a thumbnail, I bomb. People are not caring about this fight. I have different guesses why. I hypothesize that the audience doesn't want to get too behind something they're not confident they can get. I think is part of it. But I'm just telling you, as time is going on, this fight, unlike other fights, has not gotten bigger. It has gotten smaller. People are caring less and less. And I don't know if you sign a pin, you have a bout agreement, you cut into SportsCenter, you make the big announcement. I don't know if you can flip that. I'm just telling you, in my life, I've seen this happen many times, boxing, even some wrestling stuff, and it grew. This fight is going the other direction. It doesn't overly matter if they book this fight or they bring Surreal in. It doesn't overly matter. You got about 12,000 to 14,000 tickets in any given venue. You're going to sell about 12 to 14,000 tickets in any given venue. The pay-per-view is not going to go off the chart. But if I was to go back to November of last year when John Jones is hitting the president's dance and he's got Elon and everybody, what a powerful moment. And that would have been the biggest fight in the industry. That would have wiped out any notion of Francis Ngannou versus John Jones, just for example, which a year prior was the biggest fight in our industry. And if you remember, that's not a torch that Francis handed to Tom. That was a torch that went to Sergey Pavlich. Yes. Sergey Pavlich was supposed to be the big scary one in John's closet that John would never face. Mm-hmm. And Tom took that from him. So, you know, it's kind of a hot potato that moves quickly. But I bring that example up because people don't wait. They didn't wait for Francis. They didn't wait for Sergey. They're not going to wait for John. And that's just the truth.
Yeah, I'd be curious if they could get some of that back. Like, I've heard perfect scenario, they'd love to do like a three-city world tour type of press conference thing. I don't know how like tough that would be to sell on John or what it would be like by the third press conference, but there's something to it at least. But yeah, we could talk about this one for days, but let's talk about some fights that actually are happening, Chael. UFC 316 is very short around the corner here in Newark. Marab Dvalishvili and Sean O'Malley too. Marab very ambitiously laid out his plan. He said he wants to be the first fighter to get four title defenses in a year. This would be number two. Do you like this plan for Marab? Is this a good way to get himself over? You know, people criticize the style, all those sorts of things. If you can go out there, defend your title four times in a year, I think you're going to get a lot of traction.
For sure. And yeah, he is big right now. I mean, he was, when they fought at Sphere, people didn't want him. We just got stuck with him. Yeah. When he goes in, I mean, but just to prove that, his very next fight, he's jerking the curtain to Money Moicano. That was supposed to be Artem Sarukian, but either way, Islam was not huge that night. Islam became huge that night. He wasn't huge, and they're co-mating a guy who's got the family name of Nurmagomedov. Not for nothing. I mean, Marab was not a star until now. He is. Mm-hmm. These people love him. Try going somewhere with him. If you're ever at like an actual social event, you're in Vegas and you see him, you can, people, I mean, they're storming this guy. It's unbelievable. And what a hard fight though. I mean, right, O'Malley, what a hard fight. And it's not the one that I think Marab thought he was going to have. I will also tell you this because nobody else will. O'Malley versus Marab, I'm not sure that Marab won that night. I mean, that really wasn't met with a lot of controversy. That was pretty widely accepted, and we all got up and went home. That surprised me. If you go back and you watch that fourth and fifth round, you might come to a different opinion than you did the first time. I mean, that fight might have been 3-2 O'Malley.
And that was the case Sean made after it. Yes. And, you know, people said he was crazy, but I think
there
is.
He wasn't, though. Yeah. He wasn't crazy. If you went back and watched it, the announcers were very influential from the very beginning on that. And they are in most fights. That's the way that goes. I'm just sharing with you from my perspective because I didn't have the announcer. I was there live. So I didn't get to hear any of that. I just watched the fight. And when it was done, I'm like, oh, close fight, but O'Malley won. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't the case. And I only share with you if either of them is going to fight better this time, if either of them is going to have more of a motivation, more of a drive, it's going to be O'Malley for obvious reasons, right, of trying to get something back. And if he does, in fact, fight better on a fight that I'm telling you, I think he won anyway, I don't know how competitive of a fight we have here. Like it's very important that Marab wins this fight because O'Malley will derail him and stop him from getting this opportunity again. This is an important fight. And maybe not right now in this moment. It'll do just fine. And O'Malley is our biggest draw. And I'm sure Pierre might want to disagree with that. But O'Malley does have him beat on two live gate records last year. Sphere was one of them. But Pierre got 300. It's not like he didn't have help blowing up an event too.
100%.
I'm just sharing this because I've completely lost my train of thought. But the point is that's a hard fight. And it's going to be a bigger fight a year or 2 years from now looking back. But this is a pivotal fight. Whatever happens with this division, nothing happens with this division until these two settle this piece of business.
Yeah, I think you made a great point there in saying, like, you know, Marab wins. Who knows where that leaves Sean? But if Sean wins, I don't think they're making the trilogy fight right away, right? They're moving on to Sean versus Corey Sandhagen or Patchy Mix if he looks unbelievable or, you know, something in that vein. So, yeah, Marab's kind of in that Bilal Muhammad situation, right? You lose the belt, no one is kicking the door down for you to get an instant rematch, even if you're 1-1 with the champ.
Yeah. You're right about that. You're right about that. And they are not guaranteed to go to the trilogy.
No.
They're not guaranteed. We can only scumbag Sandhagen for so long. Like, sure, as an industry, we can only do what we're doing to him for so long. And as a matter of fact, I think that time is up. I think Sandhagen needs to be next, no matter what.
Yeah. How desperate is this from Sean O'Malley's side, right? Like, you have 0-2 to the champ. We're talking about this guy being, you know, the biggest star, and then you lose back-to-back fights, and you're kind of in that old school Rich Franklin, Anderson Silva situation, right, where you're cornered in the weight class until that guy loses the belt.
No, I fully believe if O'Malley loses this fight, he needs to become a 145 pounder. I see it your way. I think that and sometimes the path does go that way. Your example with Anderson and Rich is a perfect example. Rich was still a killer. He was still a main event, but he found this certain kryptonite. And yeah, no, it's problematic, man. There's a lot on these guys. One thing about the UFC is they do stick true to the brand promise that Dana White made all those years ago when he simply said the best will fight the best. You know, when he said that, a lot of us thought it was marketing, and we thought, well, you know, you kind of got to know when to bring your Conors in. You got placement. You got a business to run here. But Dana truly, I mean, we saw it just recently, Merab taking on O'Malley, who was the biggest draw, but then Dana put his next biggest draw in Jeopardy 2 against Ankalaev. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a very risky fight from a business standpoint, and it went against him. But the odds makers told him it was going to go against him. He did not care. He adheres fiercely to the code that we will not be like boxing and the best will fight the best. And no matter what the promotional push is or the cost, I will not sacrifice that the top guys fight the top guys. And I mean, we've got to give it to him. After 25 years, we've got to give to Dana. Bro, you told the truth.
I counterpoint to that one. Why is Yair Rodriguez getting the title shot over Movsar Avoyev against Alexander?
Is that done? What?
It's not done, but it seems like that's what's happening. What? If you look at all the matchups, I think that's going to be the main event of Noche UFC. Yair and Volk too.
Oh yeah, sure. If you're doing Noche, that would be a little politics on his side. Hey, what happened to the idea of Pico?
I think that's happening in Abu Dhabi.
They are going to fight after all.
I think so. Yeah.
All right. I mean, Pico's getting dealt off the bottom of the deck there, but yeah. And
then that kind of leaves Sean Silva versus Diego Lopez, which I think is being discussed as well. And then that leaves Yair and Volk, which I don't think is a rematch too many people are screaming for. But as you said, you know, he's still one of the best, obviously, but
what
some politics and timing come in.
When John Silva puts himself on the cage afterwards, when he's pulled, what does that mean? What does it mean?
I don't know. Like the spider thing he kind of does.
What does it mean?
Know. Like the spider thing he kind of does where he's like hanging off of it? Yeah.
Is that what it is? What's his nickname? Is he a spider?
His nickname is Lord. It's tattooed Lord. Across his stomach. John Lord Silva.
Hmm. All right.
Anyways, yeah. To stick on UFC 316, Kayla Harrison will be fighting for this title. I spent a bunch of time with her at ATT a few weeks ago, and like, what a crazy hard worker this woman is. Is she kind of, I think people are very low on women's MMA right now. We can just be blunt on it. Is she kind of a savior a little bit?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, Juliana deserves a lot of credit. Juliana Pena has made things so fun. I mean, mm-hmm. She is so beautiful, but comes in and runs that little filthy mouth of hers, which is what makes it work. It's what made, when you see someone as lovely, they call her the Venezuelan Vixen, and then she's the biggest trash talker in the whole sport. Like, there is something about that, man. That girl does not quite get enough credit. And Kayla's trying. I mean, Kayla's she's trying to do her part. She got thrown into a deep end. You know, she had to, when your teammate is the champion, you're in the deep end. Yeah, that means on day one, you're learning by, you know, there's a place in Thailand where they guarantee you in 1 hour that they charge you $500 for an hour, but they guarantee that after that hour, you will know how to sword fight. And the trick is they use real swords. So that's psychology, right, of getting your instincts and getting you fat and make sure you're listening clearly to what the coach is instructing you to do. That's how Kayla had to learn. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty tough way to go. And I think that would have been cool if her and Amanda would have hit it off and Amanda was cornering her and Amanda was coming on your show, kind of be like in a little voice piece. I would like that, but that's just not how this happened. So, Amanda's not coming back. It's weird that people ever covered that. And we used to not do that, Mikey. You guys like you and I, if somebody was coming back, prove it. And all you had to do is enter the testing pool. If you entered the testing pool, then we would report that you were back.
Yep.
And that never happened, but two different outlets reported that she's back. And I just thought that was a little bit weird. We need to hold our health to a higher standard. Somebody just reported that Conor McGregor's in serious talks to buy OnlyFans, which is simply not true. It's not any truer than he was going to be the president of Ireland 2 weeks ago. Okay, back. You're back.
Yeah. You're back. I was just saying I couldn't hear you, but yes, no, I don't think we're sold on that one. Two more
that
points.
That was my hot-ass wife.
She's calling you? Okay.
That was my hot-ass wife. That was Miss Brittany, yeah. And I know what she's calling for, too. She's like, wow, Mike sure has kept you for a while after being a complete dick to you for 3 months and calling your hard work against Anderson phony and never admitting to anyone that you are the linear champion that destroyed John Jones's foot, health, and career. And she's like, wow, he didn't mind keeping you, though, when he needed something.
It's true. I'm very, very selfish Canadian. It was my birthday this week, no chill. This could be my gift, the gift of time, if you got five more minutes or so for me.
I do.
Okay. I do. Are you still beefing with Islam Makhachev, or have we smoothed that all over now?
No, you know what? And I didn't want to be. I mean, sometimes you find yourself in a dust-up. I must tell you, I got misquoted. I got misquoted by a pretty big site called MMA Uncensored. And then you got your language barriers and everything else. And before you know it, I called Islam a coward, he thought. So he responded to the report that I called him a coward, which I never did. I talked about a scenario and that word was used, but it wasn't to call him a coward. I was describing a scenario. And at any rate, if he thinks I called him the coward, and so he responds to me, it's the same thing if I did. It's the exact same thing. I must fight back. I must. Not to mention, you're coming into my world. You know, like they say, don't ever get in the mud with a pig because you both get dirty, but the pig likes it. I am that pig. So when he stepped over here, like he was going to take some lumps, but I really didn't want to give them to him. I really didn't. I like Islam, and it was based on a misunderstanding. So we got it worked out. He called, we spoke, we're good.
Good, that's great to hear. I think I have only good things to say about Islam Makhachev. If he wins this next fight, it'll tie Anderson Silva for the longest winning streak in UFC history, which
keep falling off my face. Is there somewhere I can go? Can I go to like Lens Crafters? Can they make these fit my face?
Yes, I'm sure you could.
Can they? Is that what you do? You just go into a glasses shop and say, hey, these are falling off, and they take that.
Yeah, they should be able to tighten the arms and it'll make it a little more seamless.
I'm gonna go in there. When we hang up, I'm gonna go find one tonight.
Okay.
Is that where you go? You gotta go like with just normal average people. Is there a place like rich guys go? Is there
I'm sure you're out there in the Red Rock. I'm sure in their like shopping pavilion, they probably have a very nice sunglass store or something like that.
All right.
Yeah, throw down the metal card there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, it's already on file. I walk around this place, I just do one of these.
Do you like the Islam Makhachev Jack Della Maddalena fight, assuming we get that next?
Well, geez, how good is Jack Della Maddalena? And I don't think you're ready to answer that question. I know I'm not.
No.
We got that same thing going with Dreykus Du Plessis. Like, we can all stand back and go, okay, dude, hold on. You're way better than we thought that you were, but how good are you? The odds makers. I mean, they've almost pulled Chimaev even. Chimaev has been the belle of the ball. He has been the media darling since he got here. Two different weight classes, any way you want to do it. All that comes out of anyone's mouth is Chimaev. And all of a sudden, there's a lot of people thinking that Dreykus is going to win this fight, including fellow competitors.
Yeah,
including
lots.
Including Imanov, who could be next for the belt. He's like, yeah, I'm next for the belt. That means I'll be fighting Dreykus. And so I bring Dreykus because I find that happening to me too. Like, Dreykus, you're a lot better than I knew, but just how good are you? And it's the same thing with Jack. It's like, Jack, I did not know you could be world champion. I definitely didn't know you could dominantly win a world championship. You know, just how good is Jack? I don't know yet.
Yep. Last person I wanted to ask you about, if Ilya Topuria captures the title at UFC 317, 10th fighter in UFC history to have belts in two divisions, I know you've kind of expressed some concerns about the split from his coaches. Is that, you know, moving up the weight class, fighting a beast like Charles, is this too much on the plate at once, or would this just make his victory all the more remarkable?
No, it would make it that much more remarkable. It does bother me to a degree that he's not the BMF champion. The BMF championship has never quite been showed the respect that it should. I personally covet it as a title. I think that's because of its scarcity, much like an Olympic medal. I hold that to a higher standard than perhaps others do. But I only bring that to you because, you know, you want to talk about champ. If Ilya was to win this, he should be champ. You know, he really should. I don't know why we wouldn't include a title that he should have that Max currently has and is going to defend. Like, that whole thing gets a little bit strange. And I think I say that just because Ilya is that special, or at least he has the chance to show he's that special. It's very tough in life. Sometimes you have to pretend. If you have like little friends, you don't say it to them, but you think it in your heart behind their back. If you weigh 145 or you weigh 155, you weigh the same thing, which is not enough. Get bigger. You don't weigh, you know, if you weigh 125 or you weigh 135, you weigh the same thing, which is less than any man wants to. That's the answer. So you get these guys that are like, well, you know, I don't know if Islam's big enough. It's like, or, you know, Ilya, I don't know if Ilya is big enough. It's like, it's 10 pounds. Yeah. He's big enough. On any day of his life, he's big. Let him weigh in at 145 and put him in with a guy that weighed 155. Guess what? They weigh the same thing. Francis Ngannou gets spotted 30 and 35 pounds. Brock Lesnar was getting 40 pounds spotted to him every time they got in a weigh-in. Nobody said a word about it because it was normal. Well, a 35-pounder, 45-pounder, a 55-pounder, it's the same thing. What do you weigh? Not enough. That's what you weigh.
Yes. You're selling the pitch for me. I think they should just merge the heavyweight and light heavyweight divisions. But that's a conversation for another day, Chael. I know you got the family waiting. You got the show debuting. You're losing the shirt here. What a time to be alive. What a first appearance on the bonfire by the great Chael Sonnen. Make sure everyone follows this man.
Yeah. You ever seen Rick Rude? You ever seen when he does this?
Magical, Chael. Thank you so much for joining the show.
I just wanted one more microphone. The only thing I never got done in this sport, I would have done it when I got done with Machida if I beat him, because they would have handed me a microphone and I would have told that audience to sit down. All you inbred, ingrate sweat hogs, sit down, shut your mouth so your ladies can see what a real man is all about. And that's the only thing I didn't get to do in this business, but I am at least the linear champion. Goodbye, Mikey.
And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Chael for his time. What an ending there. I was not expecting to get all that skin, but you know, with this guy, you can just never know what to expect. Appreciate the breakdown of all his PED usage as well. Just classic Chael. Hopefully we have him on many more times in the future, and maybe I'll try to pin him down with a little more of a specific criteria, because as you can see, it's kind of hard to keep him on track sometime, but always fun, always entertaining. And that does it for today's show. Right back at it next week. Another pay-per-view week coming up with UFC 316. I will be headed to Newark for that fight card on behalf of MMA Junkie, and should be a good one. I think both of these title fights, John O'Malley versus Merab Dzhabalishvili 2, Kayla Harrison challenging Juliana Pena, are both awesome. Please make sure to check out the amazing feature we put together on Chael Sonnen, which is over on MMA Junkie. Worked really, really hard on that one, and it's honestly, I think, one of the best pieces of content we've put out in my career. And the great Abhi Subban, Kamikaze, producer of the show, also did all that editing, and I was blown away by his work and all the stuff that we captured down there with Kayla at ATT and at her home, seeing it come to life in the form of an amazing video. So please check that out as well, in addition to today's show. Thanks for all the support out there, and until next week, we will see you back here by the Bonfire.